Most business continuity and resilience programs that I walk into can tell me everything about their program, how it's structured, their recovery time objectives, their most critical processes, their RPOs, the critical applications in their organization, the number of plans and BIAs, their exercise schedule. They can explain all of that. What they usually can't tell me is their company's strategy and objectives. And that's a problem, because if you don't know where the company is going, if you don't know where they're trying to go, then you are protecting yesterday's business. Here's a simple example. More than 80% of the world's almonds are grown in just one place, California, here in the United States. It's incredibly efficient in terms of the market. It's also incredibly fragile. It is one weather system, one pathogen, and the entire global supply is at risk. All the slack got optimized out of this system for growing and processing and selling almonds. Well, companies do the same internally. They optimize, they consolidate, they cut out the buffer and the slack, but nobody ever asks the question, what does our strategy need in order to survive? So today, I want to give you a framework for answering two questions. How do you know where your company is headed? And how do you know and how do you align your resilience program to it? The framework for strategy comes from the guy who I think is the leading thinker alive today, and that is Roger Martin, the former business dean from Canada. And it boils down to two choices that every single company will make: where to play and how to win. I'm Brian Strausser, principal and chief executive here at BrightPath, and this is the Managing Uncertainty Podcast. So what's the core problem, just stated plainly? Well, most business resilience programs or crisis management and business continuity programs are built from the bottom up, right? You start with a BIA, you inventory processes, you figure out what's critical, you work the org chart, you build plans for what exists today. Strategy really works the other way. It's top down. It's about what the company is going to become. And when a program is built bottom up, you end up protecting everything equally. And when you protect everything equally, well, you're protecting nothing well. What does this look like? What are the symptoms of this problem? Well, every application is critical. Every RTO is 4 hours or less. Ask the team to rank the top 10, and nobody really can get you to that answer. The exercise program cycles through the same scenarios every single year. A fire, a flood, a cyber event, a natural disaster, rinse, wash, repeat. None of these touch what the business is actually betting on right now. And then budget season comes around and the program has to defend itself with compliance language. Well, the auditors require this. The standards require this. The regulators expect this. It's never about what protects the three bets that the CEO and your executive team told the board about last month. And that last one is really the tell. If your best budget argument is compliance, your program is not connected to strategy, and you can't speak to strategy. Now, this happens because the resilience leader and their champion weren't in the room when the strategy got made. And honestly, most never get invited there. So the program aligns to the org chart instead. And here's the thing about the org chart. It's a lagging indicator. It reflects the decisions the company made 2 or 3 years ago, not the decisions that they are making right now. So how do you fix this? You need a way to read strategy. Not write it, read it. And the best tool I know for that comes from Roger Martin. Roger Martin was the dean of the Rotman School of Management in Toronto, and he spent years as the key strategy advisor to A.G. Lafley, who was a longtime CEO at Procter & Gamble, one of the world's largest consumer goods manufacturers. And together they wrote a book called Playing to Win, How Strategy Really Works. If you're going to read one strategy book in your lifetime, make it this one. I think you will enjoy it. I learned about Roger because during my big company days, he came in as one of our innovation speakers and gave a riveting presentation about corporate strategy that really resonated with me. And even 20-some years later, I haven't forgotten the core lessons I learned from watching Dr. Martin speak for an hour. Roger Martin's central idea is this, that strategy is a choice. It's not a binder or a planning offsite meeting. It's not a 40-page deck, but it is an integrated set of choices that positions the company to win. And as he breaks it down, it's five choices that move in a cascade. Each one flows into the next with its answer. So what are the five choices? The first is the winning aspiration. What does winning look like for your company? It's not a mission statement or a definition of victory. If we win, then what will be true? Number two is where to play. Now, that differs a bit based on the kind of company that you are and what your product or service is, but it's what markets you're going to play in. What are the customer segments that are important to you? What are the geographies or channels or product categories? And this is the part that a lot of people miss. Where to play is just as much about where you're going to play as where you are not going to compete. Choosing not to play somewhere is a strategic decision. That is also a choice. Number three is how to win. In the places that we have chosen to compete, why does the customer pick us? Are we the low-cost option? Are we differentiated? What are we differentiated on? Speed, trust, product superiority, customer intimacy. But every company that is winning has an answer to this, whether or not they have written it down or whether or not they acknowledge that it's there. The fourth are core capabilities. What are the handful of things the company must do better than anyone else in order to make winning real, to make these choices real? Not everything the company does, but what are the handful of things that we have to do better than anyone else? And lastly are the management systems. What are the structures and the measures and the incentives and the processes that support and sustain these capabilities? This is how the company then keeps itself honest. Here's why I'm telling a resilience audience about a strategy framework. This cascade is not just a tool for making strategy, it is a diagnostic tool for reading the strategy. If you can answer these five questions about your own business, your own company, then you will know where it's headed. And if you can't answer them, congratulations, you just made finding the answers to these number one for your program. Because you cannot align your resilience program to a strategy that you can't articulate. So let's talk about how to read your own company strategy. And let's be honest about something. Most of us in resilience are not getting invited to the company strategy offsite. That's fine. You don't need the invitation. Strategy leaks out. The company communicates their strategy. It shows up in signals all over the place, and you can read them and understand them. The first signal is to follow the money, not the mission statement. Capital allocation, the spending, the deliberate spending of capital and expense, is strategy in its most honest form. Where is your company investing? Where is your merger and acquisition activity? Where is headcount growing and where is it shrinking? What got divested or sunset or discontinued in the last couple of years? That's the real where to play, regardless of what your mission statement or your company website says. The second signal is what your CEO and your CFO are telling investors. If you work for a publicly traded company, your leadership publishes their where to play and how to win choices every quarter, and they do it in your earnings calls, in your annual report, in the presentations on investor days. Go read the last two earnings call transcripts or listen to the call so you can hear the tone and the conversation that happens. If you're a privately traded company, board decks, town halls, CEO's stated top priorities do the same job. The third signal is listen for the how to win language. When executives describe why companies choose you, what words do they use? Price, scale, speed, trust, product superiority, great design, regulatory confidence. Every one of these answers implies a different set of things that you must never break. Write these words down because you're going to need them in a minute. Signal four is to find the bets that are in flight. What's the new market entry? The platform migration, the AI initiative, the acquisition that's being integrated right now. Here's the most uncomfortable truth with these. The bets in flight are usually the most fragile and least protected things in your business. Why? Because BIAs look backwards. that capture established processes. The strategic bet that's 6 months old doesn't have a plan or a recovery strategy, doesn't have a seat in the exercise program, and you may not even have continuity plans for them or have them integrated into your crisis process. And this is the thing that this CEO cares most about, the bets that are in flight. The fifth signal is even simpler. Just ask. It's the most underrated move in this profession. Go talk to the people in strategy. Go ask your resilience program champion as a part of your annual planning cycle. When you're meeting with senior leaders, ask them, what are the three bets that matter most to the company over the next 24 months? What are the changes coming to your part of the business? Almost nobody in resilience goes and asks these questions. The ones who do are running different programs. Now, let's talk about the payoff. I want you to take each of Martin's five choices and map it to a program decision. Five mappings. So I'm going to give you some examples of this. First, your resilience program's mission or purpose statement or whatever you want to call it should reference the company's definition of winning. Not the generic boilerplate, not we protect life, safety, assets, and reputation. Everybody does that. If your company wins on customer trust, then your program exists to protect customer trust. Say so, and do it in those words. It will change how executives hear everything that you say. Where to play will map to scopes and tiering. How you think about businesses, geographies, and channels, the way the strategy does, should get the deepest planning. They should have the fastest recovery objectives and the investment in future exercises. The markets the company is harvesting or exiting get maintenance coverage, and that's it. And notice what this gives you. It gives you a defensible answer as to why everything is in tier one. Well, no, the most important things are. The company has already decided what matters. You're just following the strategy. How to win should map to what must never break. This is a big one. The competitive advantage defines your true crown jewels here. If the company wins on speed of fulfillment, your distribution network and the systems behind it are at the center of your program. If the company wins on trust, then reputation management and information security matter more than any RTO that is in your inventory. So the how to win answer is the ranking function that your BIA is probably missing. It's how you get from everything is critical to an actual ordered list of what is important to your organization. Map core capabilities to recover priorities and your exercise design. Your exercises should center on the failure of capabilities your company's strategy depends on, not just hazards you've written into a risk register. The scenario design question that I want you to steal is, what event would make our how to win untrue for 30 days? Sit with that. And whatever you just pictured, that should be your next tabletop exercise. Your management system should also map to governance. You should get resilience metrics into the same management systems that track strategy execution. If strategy reviews happen quarterly, the resilience posture of the strategic bets in your company should be one line in that review. This is how your program stays aligned as the strategy shifts. Otherwise, you're rediscovering the drift every 3 years and you're starting over. And lastly, the efficiency bridge. And this is important. It might be one of the most useful things in this episode. In 2019, he wrote a piece in the Harvard Business Review called The High Price of Efficiency. His argument was that decades of relentless optimization have stripped all slack out of organizations. And slack is where resilience lives. It gives you that extra capacity and capability. Remember the almonds. Martin's prescribed remedy, his words here, is resilience. Investing deliberately in resilience is a source of competitive advantage. So the next time you're arguing for redundancy, for buffer capacity, for dual sourcing or recovery investment, understand what you're actually doing. You're not arguing against the strategy people. One of the most respected strategy minds in the world is saying that resilience is strategy. Put the article in the appendix of your next budget deck for reading. So I'll land this with five things you can do this quarter. First, write down your company's answers to the cascade questions. Aspiration, where to play, how to win, your critical capabilities, your management systems. And if you can't fill in the blanks, then go book the meeting to find out. The gap itself is number one. Number two, pull the last two earnings calls or board decks that are available. List the strategic bets that are in flight. Check if any of these show up in your BIA or your plan inventories. For most of you, they're not going to. And now you know what's actually exposed. Number three, you should re-tier your portfolio against where to play. Deep coverage where the company is making its bets. Maintenance coverage where it's harvesting and cutting their bets. Stop spreading peanut butter around, in other words. Number four, design your next exercise around a how-to-win failure. The event that makes your competitive advantage untrue for 30 days. Your executives will engage with that scenario in a way that they would never have done for before with another generic ransomware tabletop. And number five, get one resilience measure into the management system that tracks how you're tracking strategy execution. One line every quarter, alignment becomes standing rather than something more annual. So I'll bring this back to where we started at the beginning. You can't protect a company if you don't know what it's trying to become. That strategy your company has created is a series of choices. Roger Martin has taught us this. And your resilience program should be a choice too, the same choice that you're already making. Where to play tells you where to invest. And how to win tells you what must never break. Two recommendations from today, read Playing to Win by A.G. Laffley and Roger Martin, and read Roger Martin's HBR article, The High Price of Efficiency. That's it for this edition of the Managing Uncertainty podcast. I'll be back next week with another new episode. Be well.